big, massive show for you here today. It's the Week 12 Sunday recap, starting with an electric Sunday Night Football game where Saquon Barkley smashed everything in his path on way to an Eagles win. Then Andy Behrens joins the show to talk through Vikings, Bears, a main bunch of takeaways from that game. The Panthers offense is suddenly one that you need to pay attention to. And how can we make sense of one of the wackiest finishes of all time in Cowboys and Commanders? All that coming up and more on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, November 25th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball because, oh, baby, Week 12 Sunday was absolutely electric. We've got some wild performances to talk about. We have an absolutely outrageous outing for the ages on Sunday Night Football. Before we get into all of that, just want to give you all the rundown for Thanksgiving week, the programming note here. This show, obviously, because you're listening to it right now, is going to go on as scheduled. Tomorrow's Panic Meter show on Tuesday will be, as always, with Dalton Del Don. That will be as scheduled. Normal going there. And then on Wednesday, Sal Vetri is going to join me. But instead of our typical data dump show, we're just going to preview the Thanksgiving and Black Friday slate. So four-game preview coming to you all Wednesday with Sal. And then on Friday, Andy Behrens is going to join me to preview the Sunday and Monday slate as usual. No Tara Roberts. We're giving her Thanksgiving week off. She deserves it for absolutely crushing it this year. So just Andy and I will be with you on Friday to talk through the Sunday and Monday slate. So with that out of the way, let's get to our usual business on this show. As you all know, on the Sunday recap show, start with a little solo Sunday night recap, Sunday night football recap. And man, we've got a big one to talk through here. We've got Eagles 37, Rams 20. The thing I care about in this game is that the Eagles defense absolutely beat up on the Los Angeles Rams about exactly as I expected them to. all week long, written work, podcasts talked about the potential mismatch that this Rams offense had against this Eagles defense, and I think we saw it play out pretty much like the exact nightmare scenario that you would have imagined. I mean, again, I've pointed this out a lot, but Matthew Stafford is one of the worst rated quarterbacks under pressure this season. And despite the fact that the offensive line has gotten a lot of the players back from injury, that has not relented. He has still been a poor performer under pressure in some critical games the last few weeks. That seemed like a pretty rough recipe when you consider that the Eagles defense is an incredible unit, starting with the group up front. And yeah, like, I don't know if the stats are going to perfectly show this. I've only seen some pressure data from this game so far because it just wrapped up here pretty recently. But according to the numbers I have, Stafford was only blitzed on 11.4% of his dropbacks. And this team, to my eyes, still forced him to consistently adjust in the pocket. And that was an issue. You saw really just especially on critical down and distances. Like, I don't think Stafford was bad in this game necessarily, but he ended the night with 5 sacks and 4.8 yards per pass attempt. And like I said, critical down and distances were big issues. Entire drives cratered when the Eagles could get pressure on Stafford. He was 0-for-8 on third downs. The team as a whole was 0-for-8 on third downs. Excuse me. So just a rough offensive night from the Rams. I know they finished with 20 points here. One of them was just an absolute last minute, you know, meaningless touchdown to Cooper Kupp. By the way, Cooper Kupp pretty much blanked for large portions of this game. And that was also pretty predictable because you got a guy like Cooper DeJean as the slot corner. You've got linebacker play that the Eagles haven't seen in, I don't know, like a friggin' decade at this point. So there were a lot of issues that this defense was going to present this Rams offense. And I think those issues cropped up here. You know, the Rams started running the ball pretty well at different points in this game. And then they kind of just completely got away from it, which I thought was a weird plan. And honestly, the passing game looked disjointed because of the pressure and because of some of the coverage on the back end. Unless Puka Nacua was making, you know, like a freaky play at the catch point or just one of those plays, like a signature Puka Nacua reception, or Matthew Stafford was making a hero throw. There just wasn't a lot to see from this offense, honestly. And again, that's about as exactly what I expected to happen here. The Rams are going to be fine. You know, you look at the rest of their schedule, they get the damn Saints next week. They get the Bills, they get the Niners, they get the Jets, they get the Cardinals, they get the Seahawks. There are some, you know, pass rushes that might give them an issue there. We'll see what they do against the Bills, but they're skill position players that we care about in fantasy are going to have big moments in those games. Like, they're going to be fine, but emphasis on fine. I do think this team has a very limited ceiling based on what we've seen so far. They're 5-6 this year. I don't think they're going to be a player in the NFC West race. I think that's going to come down to Arizona and Seattle, two teams that we'll talk about later when Andy joins the show. I think they've got a hard ceiling this year. I think the ceiling for the Eagles is pretty unlimited. I think the ceiling for the Eagles is a Super Bowl win, mostly because of everything we just talked about with that defense. And this defense is paired with an obnoxiously special running game and a passing game that has an elite wide receiver, both of which were on display tonight. But I could talk about AJ Brown for hours. You guys know I love AJ Brown, but we're going to talk about Saquon Barkley here. And the thing I don't care about coming out of this game is like Saquon Barkley MVP debates. And you're going to see it, okay? And the reason that I don't care about these debates is that, honestly, I do not believe that most people participating in this exercise, like, nobody's going to bring anything new to the table. Most people that don't think Saquon Barkley is one of the most valuable players to his individual team and his individual offense have just dug their heels in and are ready to cling to dogma. And honestly, most people probably, like, I don't know, can quarterbacks, like, can non-quarterbacks even win this award? I don't know. It's stupid if it's just a quarterback award. I do think it's kind of stupid, but it might just be the reality of where it is. So whatever. Who cares? Honestly, who cares about the Saquon Barkley stuff, the MVP discussion? Because it's just going to be – people are just going to have that in circles. And honestly, we're too early to talk MVP anyways. A lot of season left to play. A lot of things left to play out here the rest of the way. I do think discussing the impact that Saquon Barkley has on this Eagles team and the value he provides to the offense is endlessly fascinating. So, like, that's the conversation I want to have here. We know that the Eagles have a great rushing ecosystem where I think any back can work. We've seen guys like DeAndre Swift. We've seen guys like Miles Sanders have career years with the Eagles, and we've seen them struggle to replicate that success elsewhere. We've seen, I mean, shoot, even backup Kenny Gainwell had a couple of moments against the Rams on Sunday Night Football. Saquon Barkley doesn't have moments. Saquon Barkley is the moment. He is the entire thing. Again, great ecosystem here. We've never seen a running back launch this ecosystem into the stratosphere. There are plays for the Eagles that would go down as like a short gain that Barkley just turns into an explosive. He makes the system, which I don't even know if the system and the scheme is all that great from a Kellen Moore perspective. When the scheme is right, the plays... Let me say it again. When the scheme is wrong, the plays can be right because of Saquon Barkley. He is the system now. It's like, yes, there's an ecosystem here that's great, but he is taking it and making it all his own at the same time. And I can't believe that we're still having these kind of same conversations about running back value. Maybe it's starting to change. I think the tide is starting to turn. So maybe I'm creating a straw man here, but I can't believe that some circles are still having these same conversations when we're seeing what an elite back can do and weaponize an already great rushing game. And like, Barkley's not even the first guy to do it. Look at what's happening in Baltimore right now. Look at 2022 to 2023 Christian McCaffrey in San Francisco. Like, we've seen this, and this was the discussion when Barkley and Derrick Henry went to those respective teams in the offseason. Great ecosystems for the run game, two backs that are special that can weaponize it, and that is what we are seeing with Saquon Barkley right now. You know, week 12 apparently was the first time that Barkley cleared 200 yards from scrimmage since his second year in the league, 2019. That's what the broadcast had. Well, he smashed that number and cleared 300 yards because he had like a 70 plus yard run about right after they read that statistic off. Like, Barkley probably wouldn't have had this level of statistical success back in New York. No, let me say that again. He definitely would not have had this level of statistical success in New York with the damn Giants, or really any poor offensive environment. You know, of course not. Of course that's not the case. But can we stop acting like this is exclusively a running back reality? we've got former draft busts revitalizing, resurrecting their careers when they get to good environments at from the quarterback standpoint with sharp play callers and great skill position players. Baker Mayfield flames out in Cleveland. He goes, he doesn't do anything in Carolina. He's now a good starter with the Bucs because he's got Mike Evans and he's got Liam Cohen and Dave Canales before him. You know, Sam Darnold making it work in Minnesota when he couldn't do anything right in New York. Like, quarterbacks have the same thing. Trust me, when we say wide receivers, these guys do not reach their statistical success in bad environments. Shoot, again, we're going to talk about the damn Giants later and some of the things that Malik Nabers is saying after the game. All players, all skill position players especially, quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, they all suffer statistically when they go to worse environments. That is not a unique running back thing. So, like I said, I think the Saquon Barkley MVP debate's probably worthless for multiple reasons. However, I do not think there is any denying that his arrival in Philly is going to go down as one of the most impactful developments of the 2024 NFL season. An elite running back like him, they still have the cachet to lift the ceiling of their offenses. I think Saquon is lifting the ceiling of this offense. He's taking it to a whole different level. And I think that level is a potential Super Bowl run here for the Eagles. I was skeptical about them to start the year in September. I was like, I don't really know. But ever since that defense announced its arrival after they came off their bye, like, forget the September Eagles. This is a totally different team. And I think that team is the type of operation that can make a run for the Super Bowl and can beat anyone on any given Sunday. So love what I'm seeing out of the Eagles right now. Saquon is one of the most enjoyable things to watch. And I mean, my God, I wish I had him on more fantasy teams. I hope you all have him on as many fantasy teams as possible and that you're absolutely smoking your opponents here in week 12. That's all from Sunday Night Football. With that, we can toss to the rest of the show with Andy Behrens, where we're going to break down all the games that you should care the most about, the games you should sort of care about, and the games that could have been an email. Let's get into it. Joining me now, as he does every week on the Sunday Recap Show, is my good buddy Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, pal?
Oh, what a week. That was a really good Sunday. That was really fun. It's not, man, we got a bunch of, I don't know, maybe not great games, but a whole bunch of close games, whole bunch of one score games. And we got what I think may have been the wildest and weirdest finish of any NFL game since I've been doing this job, which is, you know, that goes back decades. So yeah. What a day. What a great day to talk ball.
Yeah, I mean, Andy's been covering football, I think, not since the merger. That would be ridiculous, but pretty close. So, yeah, I mean, that's a big statement from you.
Yeah. Been with Yahoo, you know, since the 70s. So it's been a while. It's been a good 50 years at Yahoo. So I can't remember a weirder, I don't know. I can't remember a weirder maybe Sunday, but certainly weirder individual game than what we got from Washington and Dallas.
Yeah, we will, of course, get to all of that. And man, yeah, a beautiful Sunday, a beautifully weird Sunday, yeah. I would say, just for some of the unique, truly unique snowflake, like one of one type of things that we saw on several games. And yeah, even if some of those 4 p.m. Eastern games weren't necessarily the most competitive, I do think there are some big takeaways to come out of at least one of those games. But again, we will get to all of that. Reminder for the new folks here, we break the games into three categories here on the Sunday Recap Show: the games we care about most, the games we sort of care about, and the games that could have been an email. We got some funny ones there to discuss in the email section. And then we end, when applicable, we end the show with our weekly awards. And I know Andy has at least one to unfurl here later on. But let's get started. Actually, weirdly, in your neck of the woods, Andy, I mean, I really thought that there was going to be a time where we banished the Bears to the email section, but things have turned around here. They're actually leading off the games we care about. Vikings 30, Bears 27, overtime win for the Minnesota Vikings. So, Andy, let's start with the Vikings side of things here before we get to your Bears. What are our big takeaways from this game?
I think you saw what it looks like when you know, there's only so much that a defense can do to take away a player of Justin Jefferson's caliber. But like, to the extent to which a defense can like sell out to stop a receiver, that is what the Bears did with Jefferson. Almost every time they they showed us an image of him downfield. There's two guys on him,
yeah.
right? Extreme attention paid to Justin Jefferson, and Jordan Addison ran free, and TJ Hockenson ran free, right? Like, this was a, I think if you've got TJ Hockenson on a few teams, you're feeling really good. He looked great. They had a lot of room to operate. Addison in particular had a lot of room to operate. Sometimes an unnecessary amount of room to operate, because Bears corners were sinking way far, like not even in the camera frame at the line of scrimmage against Jordan Addison. But whatever, it was a good player, great game. So I think you really saw what it looks like when a defense completely sells out to stop Jefferson. If you told me, I haven't looked it up, you told me that Aaron Jones has 4,000 career yards against the Bears, I'd be like, yeah, that's probably right. He probably has about 4K. What a, you know, that guy, I was about to call the Bears us. I'll call them us. They're us. That guy just eats us for lunch every time we face him, it seems. He was really good. He goes over 100 yards. He banishes, you know, Cam Akers once again to the shadow realm. I assume that Aaron Jones is feeling pretty good. He looked pretty frisky. I think it's, you know, it's honestly a really impressive game by Darnold too. That team, man, when you've got a quarterback willing to make the throws and you've got playmakers like the Vikings have, you know, they're not the Bears. It was a little bit different today. It was a little bit different the last 2 weeks, but man, you get the Bears in like third and long, even second and long, forget about it. That series is over. That is not the case with the Vikings. The Vikings have answers on third and long. They were just really, really impressive all day.
Yeah, Sam Darnold, I thought, did play really well in this game. It's actually his second longest time to throw, 3.35 seconds, according to Next Gen Stats, of the season. I thought that was very, like, that stat's very indicative of, I feel like, how he played in this game, is that he was constantly kind of on the move. I think he was adjusting to pressure really well. You know, typically we associate Sam Darnold seeing ghosts and everything like that. I think this was... Yeah, Sam's like been on my radar a little bit, you know, with some of the shaky play of late, and just like, what's the ceiling of this year's Vikings team with him under center? But I thought he took advantage of this defense, and particularly you mentioned the matchups there that the Bears defense was giving him. And I don't know, I feel like we're kind of seeing a trend here with the Bears defense where they're a little bit more vulnerable to the secondary threats than maybe the primary, because they do game plan and they have, you know, a really good number one corner, I think game plan really well to take away these top threats, but then we're seeing like number two receivers, we're seeing tight ends and sometimes running backs out of the backfield really be able to make mincemeat of the other defenders here. Particularly those linebackers over the middle, I think, have been vulnerable to coverage. And that's really what we got. I mean, TJ Hockenson, you mentioned him. He runs a route at 84% of the dropbacks. That was the most we've seen from him so far. I think I said this a few times that it was not a big deal that the tight end two, Josh Oliver, was not going to play in this game, because he's been a critical player for them. I think they had to bump Hockenson's playing time up. I don't know, Andy, I guarantee we're going to get a ton of Justin Jefferson panic meter questions for the show tomorrow. People have already been kind of, hey, please, are we allowed to panic about Justin Jefferson? Are we allowed to complain? And I get it. He's been more of a steady Eddie producer than really like a true game, like a league winner, game defining type of player. And this was the bottoming out moment. But also, wasn't there like a touchdown called back of his as well that we're not even having this conversation if that play stands?
I was going to say there was a negated touchdown, but also it was negated by a flag that directly led to the touchdown. So right. This isn't one of those like way far away, irrelevant flags. But he also had he had a huge late catch for a first down when they absolutely needed it. Like, I don't think anybody, even people who might be panicking about Justin Jefferson, I think everybody recognizes that he's still, you know, the certainly a top three receiver in the game today, if not the best receiver in the game today. I really, again, and I haven't seen all 22 on this game yet, but absolutely every time they showed Jefferson operating downfield, there's a cloud of people around him. So I think you have to, and hey, that's, you know, he's going to have to deal with that sometimes. And he's spoken about having to deal with it sometimes, but it creates a huge edge for other Vikings. Not that, you know, fantasy managers aren't going to be happy about that, but I can't imagine that every team down the stretch is going to treat Justin Jefferson exactly as the Bears did, because it did not work for the Bears. There's a lot going on in some of my text message threads today, and one of the recurring themes is with Matt Eberflus. Like, if you know you're the defensive minded head coach, right? If we never get a stop in a key situation and we can't hold this team to less than 30, what would you say that you do here? You know, there's a lot of that going on right now.
Kind of understandable too, because yeah, I mean, congratulations. You hold back Justin Jefferson to 27 yards on two catches. Well, I mean, everybody else had like the best game of their season against yeah. Chicago in this yeah, one, yeah. You know, which I don't think is inconsequential. I've been kind of thinking this with this Vikings offense. It's like, yeah, I know we've got a lot of guys here, but it's been a minute since we've seen a big Aaron Jones game. I mean, Jordan Addison really hasn't mm-hmm. had a big game all year. And TJ Hockenson obviously is just ramping up coming off of the injury. So, yeah, you're right. From a fantasy perspective, if you have Justin Jefferson on your team, you took him in the first round and you're continuing to see him ranked as like wide receiver 1, 2, 3 rest of the season, this type of game is going to drive you crazy. But if you do care about the Vikings, and honestly, you know, when he plays the Cardinals next week or the Falcons the week after that, it's kind of nice actually that maybe they have to approach this Vikings offense thinking, all right, let's maybe not completely just forget about the other players on the roster.
Yeah, I do want to say also about Jordan Addison, in case it seemed like I was sort of diminishing what he did today. He made an early touchdown, a long catch mm-hmm. that I think he was down at the 1 or 2 yard line, where he was not only being interfered with, but like extremely interfered with, like wearing a guy on his back and still hauled in an important catch for them. So he played a great game, and he's just too good to sort of leave on an island. And he's especially too good to leave on the kind of island that the Bears were leaving him on today.
Let's get to the Bears here on a day when they, I mean, the. I'm not even gonna say anything on that reaction. I'll just throw, let's get to the Bears here. Andy, please speak.
Man, I got everything I needed today, right? It was another day in which Caleb really confirms that he's a pretty special player. I don't know. I'm not gonna get into the business of trying to rank the rookie quarterbacks before their seasons are over. I just know that the Bears got a quarterback that I can feel pretty good about. And last week's performance, and especially this week's performance mm-hmm. against a pretty frisky Vikings defense, gets me there. Also, we are a step closer to a new head coach, I think. So, like, I don't see how I lose here. Again, that's kind of where I'm at, right? Like, I haven't been making playoff plans for this Bears team. So you can't, you know, that's not going to get me down. The rest of the season, this entire season to me, has been about Caleb's development. What a game today. So he goes over 300 yards, leads an improbable comeback to get this game to overtime, and is really terrific, I thought, in the closing minutes. And it wasn't, you know, so many of the things that were going on, whether it was, certainly it's Caleb's fault, and it was also part of the Shane Waldron experience, but whatever, you know, sort of conservatism they had coached into him is, if not gone, it's certainly not at the same level that it was. Like, he's not, you know, if we're taking downfield shots, we're putting it on guys. He really threw some darts today. He was great. He was super inventive and fun as a scrambler. If it wasn't his most impressive game, it was really close to it. Again, over 300 yards, and every yard he got on the ground, I think 33 yards on the ground, they were all necessary. They were all important. The Bears finally like score offensive touchdowns in the continental U.S., right? That was exciting. They haven't done that in a while. So he returned to the end zone. He was great. The way they used Moore was great, both downfield and sort of those easy layup at the line of scrimmage targets. Keenan Allen had a big day. Keenan looks, you know, step slower than vintage Keenan Allen for sure.
Perhaps.
But he had a day. That was good to see. And they, like, honestly, they got this game to overtime, overcoming a bunch of drops. Like, there were a bunch of opportunities that receivers had that they did not convert. Cole Kmet had a huge drop that would have gone for a first down. And Swift had a drop. Keenan had at least a ball that hit him in both hands. If we're not calling it, I don't think we're calling it a drop, but it hit him in both hands, right? There were a bunch of opportunities left out there on the field, and the Bears still made a game of it.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears are definitely not perfect. I still maintain that their non-running back screen game is like a total adventure. You know, there was at least one they had to Cole Kmet. I think you'd probably call it a screen. It was just like, what is, like, that's the play. But there were several, like, DJ Moore, I think, scored on a screen. There are some useful screens in this offense now, where over the course of the season, it's like every time they would call a wide receiver screen, it was just DOA. So there's definitely been so many better wrinkles. I mean, Shane Waldron's never getting an offensive coordinator job in the NFL again. I mean, is just a tough look. And I don't even know if it's all his fault or anything like that, but this offense has just felt much better. It's run much better since he's gotten out of here and Thomas Brown has been in play. Caleb's improvement cannot be understated. And that fourth down scramble that he had after the Cole Kmet screen that I was mentioning, or whatever the hell you want to call that play, that was really impressive. He's just played so much more decisive, 12 yards per attempt against the blitz today. And I still, you know, they're not going to have a lot of game scripts like this where you literally go into overtime against a defense that, you know, is really challenging to play against, but has some holes in the secondary. I still think these receivers are going to be tough to predict because you still have an awful lot of guys going on here, and their run game is still terrible. I think DeAndre Swift's like fantasy production at different points this year was kind of a mirage to just how successful this run game is. So yeah, I'm with you that it's great to see Caleb playing like this. And the more they lose, the less likely it is that they'll kind of talk themselves into running it back again with some of this coaching staff, because I think that I'd like to see somebody else in charge of the Caleb Williams development plan.
Yeah. Same. And I think that goes for basically all of Chicago. I've been pretty impressed by Thomas Brown, though. Like, these are two good games that they have put together. We're not going to see this kind of pass volume from the Bears, obviously, on a weekly basis. So I wouldn't get too used to, what was it, 47 pass attempts from Caleb, but good to know that he can do it without, you know, didn't throw an interception in this one. He was sacked three times. One of them was just a killer in overtime. Like, you know, this had been a game right up until overtime when Caleb was really quick in the pocket. I think in the first half, it was maybe 2.3 seconds to throw. And in overtime, the sack that he took, and it was a pretty deep sack. He might have taken, I don't know, he might have been back there 4 seconds, 5 seconds. It was an eternity. Don't know what was going on downfield, but he didn't like anything he saw. And that, obviously, the defense couldn't get a stop after that sequence. So that's the ball game. But overall, really encouraging stuff from Caleb. Enough to where I think you can play him. Like, I've got him in a bunch of super flex lineups where I've been, you know, he's on the bench more often than not. I've been starting Jameis over him, and now, man, I'm feeling a whole lot better about Caleb fantasy wise, and I'm feeling a whole lot better about this receiving core rest of season.
Let's everyone make sure to check in on Andy and how he feels about those statements at about 1:30 p.m. Eastern time on Thanksgiving. We will all be thinking about you during that game. Let's move on to another, really close game here between the Chiefs and the Panthers. Chiefs 30, Panthers 27. And I actually want to start on the losing team here, the Carolina Panthers. Look, there's no moral victories in the NFL. There's no, like, okay, let's hold our head high in defeat, right? At the same time, though, if you're Carolina, Andy, you lose this game on a last minute, you know, in under 2 minutes, Patrick Mahomes drive that features like a backbreaking scramble and then ultimately a winning field goal. Congratulations. There's a long list of NFL teams that are much better than the Carolina Panthers that fall into that bucket.
Yeah.
I think this offense was very impressive, Andy, in this losing effort for the Carolina Panthers.
That is as impressed as I've been with Bryce Young. I think if you are the Carolina Panthers and you are at the point in the sort of development arc that franchise is, there are moral victories, and this was one of them. This was like getting this game to overtime seemed this is not a primary game for me, and I've got Red Zone on over there, and I'm listening to Scott Hansen talk about what a signature moment this would be if Bryce, I'm like, if Bryce Young can do what? If he can do what? I'm sorry, he needs a touchdown and a 2-point. Yeah, okay. And then it happened.
Yeah.
And like it all looked legit. Like the whole game looked legit. And if you, this is one of those cases, and there, you know, there's a bunch of these stories around the NFL. I think Bo Nix is one of them, handful of other guys. Like where Bryce Young was in September, when like sometimes I literally think he was guessing on throws and hoping.
Yeah.
To today was great. This is a really good defense that is, you know, gearing up to make a deep January run, maybe get back to the Super Bowl. This is a great team. This is a one-loss team. yes, they have a weird habit of playing one score games. And did it ever feel in doubt? I don't know that it ever really felt in doubt. But this was a great day from Bryce Young, I thought. Made a bunch of good plays, a lot of which were just purely on him. He's doing it with, I don't know, like his leading receiver today was David Moore. You know, this isn't the receiving core that ultimately we would like to think Carolina will have. So just very impressive. Also, just go ahead and keep starting Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah.
We talked about this a little bit on FFL on Sunday morning. That guy's having such a good year and, you know, predictably not a super efficient day necessarily. He still finds the end zone. Jonathan Brooks had the workload that we probably should have expected, right? Like, let's just get his feet wet a little bit. He's coming off a really significant knee injury. This is his first game action. There's this very light Miles Sanders workload just sitting there because Sanders is out, right? Let's just give him a couple touches. That's what he got. He's no immediate threat to Chuba Hubbard right now. And Hubbard is so good both as a receiver and as a rusher. That guy always finds a way. Even in difficult matchups, he's going to find a way for you.
Yeah, this game somehow made its way onto one of my ISO TVs here, and I was very happy that it did because this game was fun to watch. It definitely felt like, you're going into it, Chiefs are just going to blow out the Panthers. Well, like you said, the Chiefs haven't really blown out anybody, and I know nobody's been watching the Carolina Panthers lately, but I've said this a lot on the show. This offense is kind of coming together a little bit, and Bryce Young, I think you can map game by game improvement since he's returned to the starting lineup after Andy Dalton got hurt. And, you know, after the game today, Dave Canales said, there's no more need to ask about it. Like, and there's no more need for me to make a declaration. Bryce Young's play is making the declaration that he is going to be the starter the rest of the season. And yeah, like, is Bryce ever going to be, is he ever going to have the ceiling of a number one overall pick quarterback? I don't know, but I think we can say he looks like a starter in the league. He was blitzed on 40% of his dropbacks today, according to Next Gen Stats, and he was awesome against the blitz. That was something that, like, oh, you blitz Bryce Young as a rookie? Plays over. It's over. Because, number one, the protection was terrible, the offense was poorly designed, and they have no receivers that can separate. This offense looks pretty well designed, and it looks like Bryce has a good grasp of it. I think you mentioned in September, he's like guessing as I don't know where things are. He's getting on his damn tippy toes to see things down the field. Yeah. Like, now it seems as if he has a good understanding of what he's being asked to do. And that just comes with time in the offense and probably time spent studying the offense because he's not studying opponents or things like that because he's not playing in the damn game. So I think his little reset was probably good for him. The offensive line is awesome. The run game is awesome in Carolina. If you're a run game sicko, make sure you spend some time watching this Panthers team because it is really fun. And the receivers, yeah, it's not a perfect unit. Obviously, Jalen Coker doesn't play in this game. Adam Thielen gets back out there. I think they've moved Xavier Leggett. I can't remember somebody. Sorry, I'm misremembering who tweeted this to me, but somebody sent me a video where Xavier Leggett was talking about moving to X receiver coming out of the bye. I have like mixed feelings on that. I don't love that deployment for him. And he had one pass where if he had hauled it in, it was an absolute dot by Bryce Young in this game. But that's kind of my issue with Leggett playing. I don't know that that's the best use for him as an X receiver. So we'll see about that. But David Moore had a hell of a game, as you mentioned, mostly because Bryce was putting that thing on him. So, yeah, I just think like this was an offense that we were completely ignoring for large portions of the season. I don't think we can ignore the Panthers offense anymore. I think they've made a real statement here. Chuba Hubbard, what a beast, man. One of the best draft picks you could make this year. Anything to add on the Chiefs side, Andy? I mean, their passing game's as long as a phone book. Kareem Hunt actually gets over 4 yards a carry, but probably has his worst fantasy game in a while. I'll just add one thing, Andy. Update on the disgusting Kings Classic League, in which I, at least before today, I did have the first place team. I had to start, like, I lost Mike Gesicki, so I was in trouble at the tight end spot. I started Noah Gray in this game.
Oh,
this week.
Man.
I'm still probably going to lose because a couple of my good players didn't show up. And I didn't have Brian Thomas and Bijan Robinson. Like, you got two players on bye in that league, you're banged. But I had to emergency start Sean Tucker and Noah Gray, and those guys scored touchdowns in like the first 10 minutes, and I just thought the rest of my day was going to be just wonderful.
I don't, like, what are we doing with Noah Gray? Like,
it's
pretty unusual for a guy to score two touchdowns in back-to-back weeks, and I don't even want to talk about him in the pickups column, but maybe I got to talk about him in the pickups column. I mean, it's not, you know, this is a receiving room where there's certainly a lot of opportunity.
He's fourth on the team in routes. I mean, he's fourth on the team in routes. He's running more routes than Juju. He's running more routes than DeAndre Hopkins. You know, Xavier Worthy's out there for all the routes and just not really, you know, he's just doing the Xavier Worthy stuff. So I don't know. You might have to write about him in the pickups column.
Yeah, and the position's really messy. Like, I don't know if you do it in a week when nobody's on bye, but we got another six teams on bye coming up in week 14. And sure, I'll take a flyer on Noah Gray if somebody else has Taysom Hill on the roster and there's no, you know, there are no other waiver wire flyers that I want to take. Who's better than, I don't know, who's better than this guy at this point? Really fun game. It's not, you know, it's not high volume. And of course, he could go back to having like a one catch on two targets for 5 yards sort of game. Obviously, that can happen. But that's a lot of tight ends. You know, if you didn't get Bowers or McBride or Kittle or, you know, I don't know, one of six guys, that is definitely a shoot. It's in play for Sam Laporta right now. So I don't know. Who would I rather start, the Noah Gray or Sam Laporta? I don't want to answer that question.
The fact that you don't want to answer it, I think, is the answer. Yeah, no, that was kind of my logic with Noah Gray was when I was looking, because of course I didn't get anything off the waiver wire tight end. I knew I wasn't going to have Mike Gesicki. And I was like, you know what? At least Noah Gray is on the field a lot for the Chiefs and they're playing the Panthers. So, yeah, I mean, I think he is. He's probably never going to get highly rostered just because he's the backup tight end and people are going to look at it as a fluke. But I mean, the playing time is there for him and the targets have been there for Noah Gray. So if you need help at the position, everybody needs help at the position, especially when we get a bunch of teams on bye again in a couple weeks, like Andy said, I think Noah Gray makes for somebody you can pick up. We'll see if Isaiah Pacheco gets back rolling at full speed next week. Obviously this would have been a nice matchup to see him in, but I think not rushing him back is probably even better for your fantasy lineup. So let's move on to the crazy game that we've been waiting to talk about here. Andy's been itching to talk about. Cowboys 34, Commanders 26. If you just like went to the bathroom at some point late in this game, if you just, I don't know, maybe you had to run a few errands, you know, in the fourth quarter or whatever. This game was 10 to 9 at what, like very, very, like not halfway, but pretty damn close to halfway through the fourth quarter. So if you missed the end of this game, you missed a lot.
Yeah. I mean, at 10 to 9, like coming into the fourth quarter, we're preparing to have a conversation about like, oh man, Jayden Daniels has hit the wall. That didn't look good. What are they doing with Terry McLaurin? And I think we can still have the, what are they doing with Terry McLaurin discussion? Cause it wasn't great. Until he had like a potentially game-changing touchdown, huge long play, very little time left in this game. And I texted you and producer Colin at that exact moment and I was like, oh my God. And then there were five things that happened after that that were even crazier than the McLaurin touchdown. The ending of this thing was just wild. It's the worst special teams day that I can recall a team having. And we had that Titans special teams day against Detroit earlier this year where like every return went for 70 yards, right? Like we've seen some very bad special teams performances. This is like your kicker's missing extra points. You're giving up a couple of return touchdowns. The Turpin return touchdown, like it's a separate conversation. Like, I don't think you can, you know, I don't know, maybe we get into the 16 bye week again and you can start Turpin at receiver or something. But he is as close to Devin Hester. Like that kickoff return TD was as close to a Devin Hester play as I can recall seeing from anyone, right? Because Hester used to do the thing where he'd catch it like it's a freaking kickoff. You're at the 5 yard line. What are we waiting for, right? There would be like, you know, just a couple of really slow steps and he's just sort of feeling out the chessboard and then he sees it and goes and you're hosed. And that's what it was like with Turpin today. That was a crazy play. This whole damn game was nuts. And Jayden Daniels ends up having a huge statistical performance. Cooper Rush ends up having a pretty nice statistical day too. Just an absolute wild one. Somehow in all of this, Brian Robinson doesn't have a day. It seemed like a perfect matchup for him.
He picked up an injury pretty early in the game.
Yeah, Robinson injury, and also Austin Eckler took a big shot in this one, and hopefully he's okay. So they definitely took some hits in the backfield.
Yeah, the Cliff Kingsbury stuff, right? Because I think that's going to be the talking point coming out of this game. Like you mentioned, you know, on the radar with Cliff Kingsbury, stuff like that. Jaden Daniels has hit the wall. I don't know. I mean, Daniels did like nothing under pressure. I think he completed 1 of 9 passes under pressure. He was great from a clean pocket, according to Next Gen Stats. So it's like, I think, you know, we talked about this with this Commanders team, that they've gone against two really good defenses in the previous 2 weeks, the Steelers and Eagles. I mean, those are two really, really tough defenses to go against. And Dallas's defense is not good, but they do still have Micah Parsons, and their pass rush is kind of coming back alive. Colin has been like beating my head against the wall to talk about this on the pod, that their pass rush has looked much better since they got Micah Parsons back. And like, they're not looking pathetic from a pass rush standpoint. And I think that is at least a variable to consider here, because I don't know. I think we're also running into a problem with the Commanders, that I don't think the league has figured out Jaden Daniels. I don't think the league has figured out Cliff Kingsbury. I think they're doing pretty much all the right things from a play calling perspective, a play design perspective. I just don't think they have that many good players. Like, let's not forget, this is an offense that people thought would be among the worst in the league, a team that people thought could pick number one overall in the draft this year in the preseason. And yeah, they have Terry McLaurin, who had the 86-yard catch and run, which was one of the insane plays that, I mean, somebody tackle him inbounds, that game is over. But if you shut down Terry McLaurin, which they did for most of the day, who are you scared of in this game? Like, I know Noah Brown is productive, but he's not a scary player. Their run game has definitely gone quiet of late. And we're talking about like Zach Ertz and De'Ami Brown. Like, I think this team will look a lot better if Cliff Kingsbury's back as the offensive coordinator. I think they'll look much better next year when they actually have some more threatening players beyond Terry McLaurin.
Yeah, there is definitely a reason that we talked about this team for like a month as a serious candidate to add a receiver ahead of the deadline, right? And they make the big splashy addition with Lattimore. He's not playing, right? Man, they need somebody opposite McLaurin, because we talked about it with Jefferson about all the things that you can do. Well, you're not going to fully take Justin Jefferson out of the equation. But you should probably do those things when you face Washington, right? You should probably maximize your attention on Terry McLaurin and just let Noah Brown and De'Ami Brown and Zach Ertz beat you. And Zach Ertz has been fine the last couple weeks. He has touchdowns. He had the terrific 2-point conversion a week ago. But he's the second leading receiver on this team. And that should not be the case with like this version of Zach Ertz. It is a real miss that they didn't add, that they didn't get whoever it would have been, DeAndre Hopkins, anybody who moved at the deadline. Like there were obviously options out there for him, and they didn't attack the position. And it's surfaced today. It's gonna continue to surface. And this is a day when, like, I don't know, Noah Brown was fine, caught 6 balls for 71 yards. That's fine, but. And as your number two, to take a little heat off of McLaurin, I will also say Noah Brown has picked up a lot of PI flags this year. Like, he's got, there's some secret yardage in Noah Brown's game that has been really helpful to that team at various points. But man, as a number two, I would want a little bit more for Jaden Daniels moving forward. And also, to be clear, I wasn't going to make the Jaden Daniels has hit the wall sort of argument, but you were already hearing it, right? I thought today was a great sign that if you were worried about him as a rusher, like, oh man, is he going to be a little more conservative? Are we not going to get a lot of that? Seriously, that was a function of the two defenses that he just played. And Pittsburgh in particular did a great job of walling him in. And it is really, really freaking hard to do, as you saw against Dallas.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh walls up every scrambling quarterback. Like, if you just look at the stats against them, they're brutal against scramblers. So no surprises there. On the Dallas side here, real quick, they win this game. That's good to see. It's honestly, if you care about fantasy, you want the Cowboys to remain competitive, because you don't want them to get into let's experiment with Trey Lance mode. Because look, it's gross. This hurts me to say more than it hurts anyone else to say, but like, they've turned CeeDee Lamb into Wandale Robinson, and which is definitely which is definitely a look what they've done to my boy. They've massacred my boy. 12 targets, 67 yards, 10 catches for CeeDee Lamb. It sucks, it hurts, but you know what, if CeeDee Lamb's gonna have to play the rest of the season without Dak Prescott, and we're gonna have to just get hitch after little hitch after little hitch against zone coverage for CeeDee Lamb, and we got a PPR scam our way to success for CeeDee Lamb. Yo, we'll take it. Cooper Rush, sit back there, throw that pill 30-plus times a game, get up to 50 in some of these games. We don't care. We don't care about the Cowboys. Let's just remain competitive. I mean, competitive. It's super, super high quotation marks. Win a few games. Let Jerry be diluted a little while longer. Don't nobody think about no Trey Lance, all right? Like, we keep Cooper Rush on the field, and we PPR scam our way to fantasy glory with CeeDee Lamb.
Look at these next four games. It's the Giants, it's Cincinnati, it's Carolina, it's Tampa Bay. Like, these are beatable, gettable pass defenses. Cooper Rush has 601 passing yards over the last two games. It's not looking pretty at all times, but man, it's kind of working for him. It, like, deep league, super flex, fantasy purposes, Cooper Rush has not been a problem. I agree. This is probably the best. I don't know. If we were going to get stuck with one of these two quarterbacks, throwing a CeeDee Lamb for the remainder of the year, this is probably the best path for him to have ongoing fantasy value. It's not going to look like it would with Dak, but it's something. Like, I don't know, you can still play him and think of him as a highly playable wide receiver one. And there was at least some level of doubt about that a couple weeks ago.
Absolutely. Those games coming up here are really nice. Also, not for nothing, you know, it's a short week. The Cowboys play on Thanksgiving. They play the Giants. Luke Schoonmaker might be something for the people mm-hmm. out there at tight end. I mean, even Brevin Spann Ford, you know, he had some moments here. He's had some moments the last couple of games. The Cowboys just always, like, Luke Schoonmaker, add him to a long line of Cowboys tight ends post Jason Witten that have had a number somewhere between 85 and 89, roughly are like 6'5", 250, and kind of just do the same thing every year.
Yeah. No, it's such a good point. He ends up with a touchdown today. He was like a desperation $10 DFS start for me that worked out just fine. And again, it's a really short turnaround for Ferguson to get back, so that may not happen.
Yeah, Cowboys offense is in the coping corner. I mean, I don't know. We'll discuss it tomorrow. We'll discuss it tomorrow. But if we're Big Ten tight end scamming and PPR scamming our way with CeeDee Lamb, I guess. We'll take it.
That hurts a little.
On that note, let's take a quick break so I can compose myself, read the 50 messages that Colin has sent us in the production chat.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we'll get right back to it on the other side. All right, we're back. Let's get into the games we sort of care about. And maybe we are sort of shortchanging this game, our final 1 p.m. close game here before we get into the 4 p.m. Eastern games that were just kind of a slog. Titans 32, Texans 27, definitely one of the bigger upsets this week. Andy, the Titans are not a good football team, but they did beat the Texans. And they are particularly difficult for the Texans to play against because that defensive line will get after you. And if you can get after the Texans, you can mess with CJ Stroud. And like, that's just the way it is with this offense at this point.
Yeah. So the Titans get this win on a day when Will Levis threw a pick six, right? Right. And that's I mean, man.
And he took eight sacks. He took eight sacks in this game.
Like, I mean, he was just obviously wrecking games earlier in the year. He gave the Bears a game. Like, he's been giving games away, and this is the exact method for doing it. And the Texans still can't get a win, and they're at home, and they had an adversarial relationship with their own crowd for much of the game. Like, why? Like, you're a 7-win team. Like, you're in control of the division, and the vibes are really bad, and you just lost to Will Levis on a day that Will Levis wasn't necessarily great. Couple of long touchdowns. Of course, Westbrook Akine gets his weekly touchdown. This is one of the wilder TD streaks in the league because he finishes every game with like two catches and one score. And it always seems like an improbable score. And I never give him his due in the pickups column, right? Because like, there's no way that's happening again. And then it just keeps happening. Just keeps happening relentlessly every week. Tony Pollard, great. Tony Pollard, like, we talked about him at length on Fantasy Football Live on Sunday morning. What a great season that is a little bit off the radar because it's one of those things where if you're not if you're not glued to Titans football, you might be missing a lot of it. Like, every good thing he does is after contact this year. It's just been a tremendous year. And he goes well over 100 yards today on a day without Tyjae Spears. He was great. He's been great all year. Another good Calvin Ridley game. And I don't know, Will Levis found a way to... I don't think we can trust Will Levis. No. I certainly don't trust Will Levis in fantasy, but gives us 270 plus yards, couple of touchdowns. Again, long TD to Chigakonkwo. That was a great play. Conquo's good, man. Another guy who doesn't get really any volume at all, but when it comes his way, he's fully capable of long, like, field flipping plays.
Let's see if I can explain how Will Levis made me feel in this game. Because this one game was also on one of my screens. Will Levis wasn't good in this game, but if you cut out like 10 plays, which it's not an insignificant amount, but if you cut out 10 plays, I mean, shoot, just the 8 sacks, the fumble, and the pick six, you might be able... I can't believe it actually had... The math actually added up there. If you cut out... Maybe we'll call it 12 plays just to be safe. You cut out 12 plays this game, you might be able to convince yourself that Will Levis is good. And he's at least been... Again, not good. Serviceable for what we want out of him from a fantasy perspective. I mean, I don't think there's any shot the Titans are running it back with Will Levis next year. I think that has probably already a shut case, but Will Levis is going to be in our lives in some form or fashion. Like, I don't even know if he'll ever be like the Jameis Winston comparison that I gave him. I don't even think he's that good.
It's going to be the Mitch Trubisky thing, right? Where he surfaces as a spot starter once or twice a year.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right. Yeah, not like Fitzpatrick, not like Jameis, like somebody like the beloved backup that people want to see, but just we're going to get a couple of weirdo Will Levis moments over the course of his career. And you know what? If he's just that guy, not a 17-game starter, I actually think that would be a... Ooh, let's see. This could get weird because some of those deep passes were... I mean, right on the money. Like, right on the money, some of those deep passes. And yeah, I mean, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina on this touchdown streak. This is how... Look, and I'm not being disrespectful because these are all NFL players, are all great players. But this is how... If we talk about, like, random players scoring touchdowns, this is how random Nick Westbrook-Ikhina is. Like, I've, number one, never charted him for reception perception. And even more than that, I don't think I've ever been asked. I don't think anyone's ever been like... And trust me, I have been asked about every... I charted Devon Valey on Saturday morning, okay? By the way... Maybe a useful little player. I charted Devon Valey, a real life thing that I did on a Saturday freaking morning. Okay. I've been requested everybody. I don't think anybody's ever asked me to chart Nick Westbrook-Ikhina. So pretty interesting stuff, although he always ends up playing for the Titans. So yeah, this game did come down to the Titans defensive line, which is sick against a woeful Texans offensive line. They dominated the line of scrimmage in the run game. They pressured Stroud on 40% of the dropbacks. And yeah, at this point, like, these type of performance, losing is tough if you're Houston, but these type of performances offensively for Houston are just not a surprise at this point of the season.
Yeah, man, Joe Mixon really hasn't, he's hardly missed this year until today. This was a rough one. 14 carries, 22 yards. Got a little bit of action as a receiver. Not enough to make a difference fantasy wise. Probably not enough to get you a win. Tough day for Stroud. At least one of the interceptions was a really bad ball. A couple of misfires. Ends up with a couple of touchdowns. Nico Collins had one. Had another one taken off the board by penalty. I think another penalty that it was like an illegal shift. Right. It was a penalty that was. Yeah, that one really, really hurt. That was a non-play affecting flag. So that was particularly rough. But I don't know. You can feel pretty good about Nico Collins. I don't know that you feel particularly good about CJ Stroud moving forward after this one. I guess he kind of got home fantasy wise. A couple touchdowns isn't bad, but it's certainly not enough to make a difference.
Yeah. No. I think we're. Another coping corner candidate. CJ Stroud has been in the coping corner for a minute. I don't feel like he's coming out anytime soon. Let's move on to Packers 38, 49ers 10. We'll get to the Packers in a second. Andy, the 49ers are toast.
They really are toast. That division is so tight and so fun. And they're barely a part of it, right? Like, they're barely part of the conversation right now. They obviously need Brock Purdy back, but I don't know that Brock Purdy would have been the answer today either. Like, as you know, it's just Brandon Allen.
Right.
He wasn't great, but he was fine. He was better than I expected him to be through one interception, and it was not even a little bit his fault, right? He hit Deebo Samuel in the hands on the ball. It wasn't, you know, obviously I'm not saying that Brandon Allen equals Brock Purdy, but I don't know that Brock Purdy would have been the difference in this one. You give up 38 points. Obviously they're dealing with injuries beyond Brock Purdy. It does kind of sort of feel like they're toast. They did not have a lot of answers here, and they just don't have a path to putting up a big point total with what's left of their offense, which is a little bit weird to say because you do still have Christian McCaffrey in the game. He hasn't looked like the best version of Christian McCaffrey, which is probably to be expected because he was idle for, you know, 2 months, right? And is still getting himself back, presumably into game shape. Should be there by now. This wasn't a great one for him. Wasn't a great one for Deebo. George Kittle seems to be the only person who can survive this fantasy wise, but you know, another loss, and they got tough games coming up, and another loss, and it's going to be really hard to see a path.
Yeah, I mean, they probably don't get blown out if Brock Purdy's under center, but they've just suffered so many injuries this year.
Yeah.
And it's just, okay, now you're down your starting quarterback who's played good ball this year. We're probably pretty close to wrap it up time for the San Francisco 49ers. It's tough to then talk about the Packers because for the most part, they just controlled this game. And, you know, all year, Josh Jacobs has played really good football, and, you know, he wasn't scoring highly in fantasy. And it's just, well, he's just not scoring touchdowns. Well, congratulations. Now he's scoring all of the touchdowns. He has 3 in this game. He was just plunging in from the 1 yard line. So the universe is correcting itself there, Andy.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, Josh Jacobs is always great. Like, even in his quiet fantasy performances, he always has a couple of moments that are really, really fun to watch. He was good. Jordan Love was fine. Not even a particularly great game from Jordan Love. It would have looked a whole lot better if Christian Watson would have hauled ball that was just placed perfectly. Like, that was a beautiful throw and the most Marquez Valdez-Scantling thing that we've seen from a Packers receiver since the MVS era. Just a wild drop by Christian Watson. And I know that's part of his game, right? Like, it's crazy that he was capable of the game that he had last week against the Bears when he was, if any one player was the difference in that game, it was Christian Watson. He made a couple of absolutely insane catches that both went for a ton of yards and really changed the trajectory of that game. And then he drops the easiest walk-in touchdown he's ever going to have. So that was really rough. If you're, you know, I've got Jordan Love in a few places, that was a little rough, but Love plays fine. Josh Jacobs is absolutely brilliant in this one, and the Packers just control it.
Christian Watson, volatile and tough to predict. who could have seen that one coming? Romeo Doubs, I thought, was awesome in this game. He does leave with a concussion, but he's played really well this year. So it's his really good play is a big part of the reason why, like, Jaden Reed's not a trustable asset every single week, and just why this receiving core is kind of a moving target. But Packers offense, we'll see what they do against Miami on Thanksgiving, because this was definitely one where they did not have to try. I think they will have to do a little bit more trying against the Miami Dolphins on Thanksgiving. Let's go to another game here. Broncos 29, Raiders 19. Bo Nix, I did not think I'd be saying this midway through, or not almost to the end of November here. Bo Nix to Cortland Sutton might be one of my sneaky favorite, like, quarterback to wide receiver connections right now. These two guys are just on fire, and Bo Nix continues to look like he's got a really good handle on this Broncos offense.
Cortland Sutton had a day. I thought he's looked great for a while, and he is the clear top receiver on this team, and Bo Nix knows it, and they really do have a connection. I honestly, this is the Bo Nix development arc is probably my favorite of the season, and credit to him and credit to Sean Payton, but he was kind of funny bad, like, in the first game of the year. Like, where he's come from where he was is really, really something. He's just playing great, and the game is certainly not, I mean, the game is clearly slowed down for him, right? Like, he looks like he's been at it for 4 or 5 years. Yeah. And I know he's a little bit older. He kind of has been at it for a while. He's got a lot of games on his belt, but he just looked tremendous in this one. I thought he was great. There's another game in which we know he can run. We've seen it. It was a big part of the story for him when we were kind of talking ourselves into him as a fantasy asset after some rough early weeks. Well, he's got a little rushing upside. We haven't even seen it for like 3 weeks, and he's still been really, really good in fantasy because he's just dealing with this receiving core that's Courtland Sutton, and you mentioned Devon Vele earlier. He looks really good. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of a sucker for the gigantic slot guy. He's been really fun. He hasn't, you know, he's not finding the end zone. He's not putting up like, I don't know. He's not making a ton of fantasy noise, but he kind of pops a little bit on the screen.
Oh, you're talking to, you know, big slot king over here. So yeah, I'm all in on what you're saying here. Look, I'm not saying I'm all in on Devon Vele, let me be clear, but he ran around on 68% of the dropbacks, which is a nice jump up because normally Sutton's the only one allowed to run around on 60%+ of the dropbacks here. And I think his best games, Devon Vele, have been now the last three, but like Chiefs, Falcons, Raiders all in a row, steady improvement from him. He's going to be 27 in December. I mean, it's crazy. So yeah. I mean, he's gonna be a 27-year-old rookie. I don't know what that means, like projecting his future, but he actually kind of I wrote this in the reception perception rookie report. I think he kind of reminds me a little bit of like a Tim Patrick type, ironically, another former Bronco. So yeah, big slot stuff for Devon Vele is interesting. We care about a guy who's getting 9 targets and running around on 68% of the dropbacks of Bo Nix's offense, which is not something I thought I'd say, but it is the truth of where we are. Real quick on the Raiders, Gardner Minshew threw 42 passes in this game and then broke his collarbone. So he's going to be out for the rest of the season. Desmond Ridder goes 5 of 10. It sounds like we might get Aiden O'Connell activated off IR. So, I mean, Sincere McCormick led the team with 33 rushing yards today.
Hey man, Amir Abdullah found the end zone. I needed it. I started him in an embarrassing number of leagues, and Amir Abdullah came through for me. They probably get Alexander Mattison back at some point. I wouldn't worry too much about Zamir White, but like obviously the performance of McCormick and Abdullah was both about who wasn't playing today. But man, Abdullah at least made a house call. I don't know. Not that it would move the needle or anything, but it, you know, as we think about Daniel Jones destinations and places where he could actually land, I don't know what he wants to do. I don't know if he just wants to go to a good environment and productive developmental environment and just be with a good coaching staff and offensive minded, you know, super geniuses or something, in which case he's probably not going to the Raiders. But if he wants to play, he should go to Vegas.
Yeah, if I'm Daniel Jones, I'd be wanting to do the former, not the latter. Just let me take a beat here, like soak up some good stuff and try it again in a different spot at some point. But yeah, I don't know. You're right. He could definitely play for the Raiders. I just don't, why the hell would you want to play for the Raiders? Why would you want to successfully run away from a tornado right into a forest fire here, which is what you'd be doing if you left the Giants into and going into the Vegas Raiders at this point, a completely sinking ship. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. Everybody talks about this quarterback class like it's not going to be that good. Shoot, if your team like the Panthers, like thank God we got some signs from Bryce Young here, because we're probably gonna have to play him next year. There's not gonna be, you know, when they're picking in the first round, like a real good quarterback. But these teams like the damn Raiders and the Giants, they will at least have to discuss some of the quarterbacks at the top of the draft. And you know, even if they're not quote valued there, they might have to be reaching for them. Okay, let's talk Seahawks 16, Cardinals 6. This is one of the most disappointing performances of the week. The Cardinals 6 points after coming off their bye. And, you know, this was a team that was number one in offensive EPA since week 8. Like, they've legitimately played really good football, and I think they just played terrible offensive football in this game.
Brutal interception thrown by Kyler Murray in this one. Just an absolutely brutal play. And they just, you know, I mean, Trey McBride put up numbers. He gets targeted 15 times. He was really good. There was a crazy Michael Wilson catch in there. There was a nice Marvin Harrison near touchdown that wasn't a touchdown. Nothing on the ground whatsoever against Seattle. Just a really tough watch all around. And I wasn't expecting it, because Arizona's been a really fun story. And the defense kind of showed up too, right? Yeah. Like, That wasn't the problem. I mean, your offense handed Seattle points. It wasn't, you know, this is another game when the Cardinals defense basically held an opponent to a single digit point total if we back out the interception. So they showed up, and for you know, Murray to kind of be MIA in this one and have a really disappointing effort. I don't know. I'm surprised by it. And then on the other side, like there was a moment in this game, and it kind of echoed what you said earlier about Will Levis. It's not exactly the same framing, but the one of the broadcasters in this game actually said, man, if you take out the interception, what a game by Geno Smith. And that's just every Geno Smith game, right? Like, what a game by Geno Smith if you just erase from your memory the one or two throws that you can't believe he made because they were that poor. Everything else was really fun. Like, this was a pretty good game from Geno Smith if you back out the disaster play.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the interception just was like, what the hell are we doing here? But yeah. He has been a pretty fun quarterback to watch if you can stomach some volatility. JSN continues his really good run here. He scores another touchdown, 7 targets, 77 yards. So I think he's graduated to, you know, we probably don't have to be asking start sit questions about JSN. I think look, injuries always suck. You don't want to lose players, but I will now maintain that the Seahawks losing DK Metcalf actually was a good thing for them to open up their brains to expand Jaxon Smith-Njigba's role, because you could pretty much map it to that exact point for when they started getting him these really intentional targets and uncorking him in the intermediate routes that he always could have been running. And finally, I think maybe he stepped up to the challenge. I don't know. I'm not putting all the blame on the coaches, but something happened then that really unlocked things for JSN.
DK Metcalf is actually one of my favorite receivers. He's been a pet receiver of mine since he came into the league. This was the first week this year that I had another Seattle receiver. I had JSN ahead of him in the ranks. And I kind of feel like I'm going to move forward that way for a little while.
I think you might be. I think we're getting to that point. He's just been super productive for them. All right, let's take our final break. We come back, we'll run through the games that could have been an email right after this. All right, we're back. Andy, let's talk through some games that could have been an email, starting with Buccaneers 30, Giants 7. I would say, Andy, the email subject line is, this game is defined by two rookies, comma, on opposite ends of the spectrum. For the Buccaneers, the defining rookie is Bucky Irving, who I know you have extolled the virtues of consistently on this podcast. So I will let you sound off on Bucky Irving, who, what an exhilarating runner. But on the Giants side, this game is defined by a rookie receiver in Malik Nabers, who was targeted 0 times in the first half and had a lot to say about it afterwards. I'll just read off a few quotes from Malik Nabers. These are all, I got these all from at My Sports Update, who had this. Giants wide receiver Malik Nabers, quote, "It ain't the quarterback. Same outcome when we had DJ at quarterback. It ain't the quarterback." Reporters asked him, "What is it? Is it the play calling?" Nabers responded with saying, "I don't know," approximately 10 times in a row. So it didn't, not great. More from Giants wide receiver Malik Nabers. "I started getting the ball when it's 30-0. What do you want me to do? Talk to Daves. Talk to Daves about that. Talk to Daves." Obviously talking about Brian Daboll. I tweeted this, Andy, that you probably could have gotten, I don't know, minus 10,000 odds in the summer that Malik Nabers was going to have this exact quote at some point this year. So pretty predictable outcome here for the Giants.
Man, talk to Daves is that's a t-shirt. That's great. That's really, really good. Yeah, but enormously disappointing game for the Giants for a variety of reasons, but that's a big one. The curious lack of usage for Malik Nabers while this game was in doubt is certainly one of them. But you mentioned Bucky Irving. Just in terms of like rookies who have impressed me this season, and I honestly didn't see it coming, man, I like nobody is ahead of Irving for me. I think he's been just an absolute wow player. Every game there are 2, 3, 4 moments from Bucky Irving when I don't know that there's 3 guys in the league who are able to gain some of the yards that he does. And there are things that, like, until you see it in slow motion, I don't know how he does it. And there's just not very many runners in the league that are like that for me. So he's just been an absolute revelation. He's great in this one. It's a little bit of a bummer that Rashad White was fine in this one as a fine player, and Sean Tucker found the end zone in this way. Four different guys had rushing touchdowns, including Baker. I don't know that Bucky Irving on 25 touches a game, 28 touches a game. I don't know that that's the best usage of Bucky Irving anyway. What we're getting from him is fine. If we're just getting a dozen carries and a couple of catches, I'm starting Bucky Irving every week because I just don't see anybody else in the league who's capable of some of the shockingly, inventive highlights that he's producing. Is there beef between Baker and Tommy DeVito that I didn't know about? What is the Baker Mayfield doing the DeVito celebration thing? What does that stem from? Or is that just Baker going back to college has to have beef with absolutely everybody he plays? Is that what this is?
He said after the game he was just showing love to Tommy DeVito. I mean, I don't know. If Baker has the sort of, like you said, the vendetta chip on his shoulder, that's good. We want revenge game Baker, at all times. That's what low expectations, chip on his shoulder, revenge game Baker is the best Baker. So if he's got to access some weird slight with the DeVito stuff, I'm pro that. I love everything you said about Bucky Irving here because he's a guy who makes you want to. He makes you want to make some irresponsible comparisons and projections for the future for him when you're watching him.
Yeah.
He's so good. He's a very exhilarating runner. I thought he was awesome in this game. One of the big things that we talked about with Mike Evans coming back is, are we going to see the running backs kind of decrease their role in the passing game? Because it had been Kate Otten and then all the backs in terms of receiver production since the Godwin Evans injury before the bye week. Coming out of the bye week, Bucky Irving was more involved in the passing game than Rashad White. And I think that can't be understated. Mm-hmm. And just final note on Bucky Irving, who again is awesome. The Bucks were the worst run team in the NFL last year. The worst. And I'm not saying it's all Bucky Irving, but there are other backs involved here, as you mentioned. The offensive line is kind of growing up a little bit together, but they're a top 10 rushing team by EPA and success rate this year. And again, it's not all Bucky Irving, but it's not all Bucky Irving, if that makes sense.
That's really well said. The other thing I think we should maybe mention in this game is that, Tyrone Tracy didn't get yanked after fumbling, but this is two games in a row that he had a critical fumble. Yeah. This was a red zone fumble, and he didn't play the series following the fumble, and Devin Singletary scored. Tracy did play late in the game, so I don't think he's erased from the game plan, but there's at least a chance that Brian Daboll decides he has to do the thing that coaches always decide they have to do, right? After a young player fumbles twice in consecutive games. I'm on watch for that. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I'm on watch about Brian Daboll. Enough already of Brian Daboll. I'm out. Yeah, I'm out on Daboll. I'm out on this whole Giants experience. If I was a Giants fan, I'd be one a clean sweep, clean slate at the end of the year. Okay, next game up: Lions 24, Colts 6. Andy emails pretty simply: the Lions are the Lions, and the completion percentage dorks get another game of 39% completion rate. That's not all Anthony. The completion percent debaters on both sides get to be happy coming out of this game.
Yeah, this is obviously one of the major storylines of the week was what the follow up looks like for Anthony Richardson. And, at least box score wise, it looks an awful lot like some of the worst weeks that we've seen from him so far, although, no sacks in this one, no interception. There are a lot of incompletions here. Did some good work on the ground. It wasn't all bad. Kind of resurrected Michael Pittman a little bit. He's been quiet when he plays, but he had a really good game, almost 100 yards, which was more than half of the passing yards that Richardson was responsible for. Just not a lot going for the Colts. Detroit's a great team. I don't want to really overthink it. They're not the best team in the league right now. They're right there. They're an obvious Super Bowl contender, and they're pretty clearly the best team in the NFC right now. So dominant performance by them. What's new?
Yeah, what's new? I feel like if you're a Lions fan, you're going to get annoyed listening to the podcast because it's you guys never talk about my team. Well, what is there to say about your damn team? Your team rocks and blows everybody
out.
They
all just start themselves too, right? I don't know. We can talk about Sam LaPorta. He's the only question mark on that team, but everybody else is, yes, you want to play him. There's not a lot of thought that goes into it.
Yeah, Dave Montgomery injury situation to watch. He seemed pretty optimistic about it, but they do play, of course, on Thursday against your Chicago Bears. So we won't be talking about them on the Sunday recap next week because they will have played on Thursday. So great. Next game up here, I'll just say on Anthony Richardson, I think he was fine in this game. There was definitely some plays left on the field by some of these receivers and stuff like that. Otherwise, like, this is the type of game where I'm not freaking out about his performance. I think he was fine in this game. Final game to discuss here. Dolphins 34, Patriots 15. Again, for transparency, this was just the game I saw the least amount of in the 1 p.m. slate. Doesn't look like I missed too much.
Jalen Waddle finally had a day. That was exciting. Devon Achane was great. Great again. He's like, this is a really good game from Tua, too. Like, really good game plan. A lot of motion for the Dolphins in this one. They ran some really creative stuff, some really fun stuff. They always do. Again, Achane good. Good to see Jalen Waddle finally have a day. If you've been starting him all year, your team might not be in great shape, but you can at least feel relieved that, you know, he's still the guy that you thought he was. That was good. I don't know. On the Patriots side, like, Drake May ended up having a fine day in the box score, so it was fine for fantasy purposes. They didn't do a thing until they trailed 31-0. So there's not a lot that you can point to and feel great about. Really quiet day from Ramondre. I don't know. Demario Douglas had his usual 5 catches with no score.
Sounds about right. Jonnu Smith continues to rock. I did see a few of the Jonnu Smith catches, and those are great. Those are not going away. So yeah, it's good that Waddle had this game. I know I said this at some point, maybe not on this pod, but one of the billion times I talked into a mic the last week, that Waddle's going to have a game at some point, and you're just not going to be able to predict it. Congratulations. Yeah. This was the game. If you had to hate start him, this was the moment. Hopefully it continues to keep up, because there's nothing wrong with Jalen Waddle, the player. It's just he's been getting out targeted by guys who are having good seasons in Jonnu Smith and Devon Achane as a receiver. So the most important thing from this game, and producer Colin, this is his note, safe to say the Dolphins saved Thanksgiving for the NFL by getting to a point that the night game has two teams that are gunning for the playoffs. They're 5-6, second in the AFC. Yeah, the Dolphins are alive here. They're hanging on to playoff contention. It's not going to be an easy path. And yes, now everybody can't get completely blitzed by the night game on Thanksgiving, because that's the best game, probably. I don't know, Andy. I don't know what's going to happen to your Bears. We'll see. You might want to get completely blitzed. Maybe people that are Cowboys. Hey, please drink responsibly. But because you want to see the Packers and Dolphins, that's going to be a good game, the final one.
It is going to be a good game. I'm not throwing out a guarantee that I'm not going to be at least moderately blitzed. I'm sure I'll be able to recall roughly what happened in the Miami game. I'm not making any commitments at this time.
Fair enough. All right, let's finish this up by giving out any awards. I know you have something to give out, Andy, but I've got to at least mention, for Vulture of the Week, I think is it Sean Tucker? 3 yards, one touchdown. I mean, Roshon Johnson, 2 yards, 1 touchdown. That's pretty rough. But I mean, people probably had to start him. The only human being who started Sean Tucker is me. And, I'm still going to lose this game, but it at least makes me not feel like an idiot that there's like a 0.8 point staring me in my starting lineup.
With Roshon, at least you knew that he had a goal line role, right? And the Bucks really talk up Sean Tucker. So it was always likely that he was going to see like 5 touches in this one. But man, those of us who were banking on roughly the game that we got from Bucky Irving, right? Like, I talked myself into a place where Bucky Irving could not fail, or it would have looked really bad in this one. I might have liked another touchdown from Bucky, but whatever. Everybody can have one.
Fair enough. You got any awards to give out here?
I don't even know what to call it, but I just wanted, you know, I haven't talked a lot recently about the ongoing message thread that I have with a fantasy league that is made up entirely of like mostly South Suburban meathead Bears fans. And for obvious reasons, it's been wild this season and is mostly focused on the coaching staff. Today I got super distracted in the middle of my day because all of them were going in on like literally the one coaching decision that was okay by the Bears. They'd been down 14. They score a touchdown. They're down 8 and they go for 2. oh my God. The reaction of these guys was, like, this is fireable. He's got to go. Like, the play hadn't even been run yet. Like, they hadn't even missed the 2-point conversion yet. And, like, this is like the one thing that is an okay decision that the coaching staff has made, right? Like, people understand the logic of it. You have a chance to go down by just 6. Then if you score again, you just kick the extra point and all of a sudden you have the lead. Otherwise, you're just taking 2 shots at a 2-point conversion. You'll probably get one of those, whatever. It's a totally defensible position, but this was the line that this entire group drew and was like, that's it. He's got to go. How are you going for 2 here? This is crazy. Absolutely fireable offense. And they all agreed. And then I pushed back a little bit. And one of them said to me, you're the guy who told me to start Audric Estime, so you can go too. That was harsh.
Well, you know what? I know what to categorize that human as. That's our unsung hero of the week. I mean, hey, listen, everybody, if you are a fantasy analyst or even like remotely pretend to know about the NFL, you're going to have somebody saying that to you. I had my brother-in-law ask me this week, like, should I start this guy or that guy? And we were in person, like, and I just looked at him. I was like, dude, I don't know. He's like, this is your job. I'm like, no, it's not my job to handle your start sit decisions. It's my job to just talk about the games. These are your problems. I'm not beholden to everybody's start sit decisions. And Andy, neither are you, even though that person is the unsung hero of the week, because that's a pretty good burn. Your call on
it's a pretty good it's burn. A, I mean, it was
it's
fair.
It's a great burn, and like it's a great immediate comeback to you being like, well, actually, and you're right, but still, well, actually, it is good to go for the 2-point conversion. You know, that's a great burn back. So that person is still the unsung hero of the week, but you are not to be held responsible for Audric Estime and Sean Payton's nonsense.
I appreciate that. I do, but I'm still smarting a little bit. We give each other a lot of shit in this text thread. They don't all sting like this. I'm gonna have to sit with this for a little while.
I mean, that was pretty great. So again, we love it. Dudes rock. All right. That's going to do it for us today. Shout out to Andy Behrens. Hell of a show. A lot of stuff to get to, even though we only had a few games because of all these bye weeks. I'm glad to be leaving all the bye weeks behind. We have a great week of content ahead of us, but leading into Thanksgiving. For tomorrow, on Tuesday, Dalton Daldon is going to join me for the post week 12 People's Panic Meter. I'm sure Dalton will have a soliloquy about his Niners prepared. We'll see what he thinks about Justin Jefferson. Make sure you send in your panic to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. We want to hear from you. There's only a few more of these panic beater episodes left because we are trending towards the fantasy playoffs at this point when there's no more panic time. So let's just try to prepare for these matchups. So get them in. Hope to hear from all of you. Until then, we are out.